Well, we're in this big long chapter, chapter 41 on coordinating conjunctions and a little bit on subordinating too. We'll get into that especially in the next chapter. But we're looking at the introduction part here, around page 242 here. And we looked at coordinating conjunctions and looked at how various elements within sentences can be conjoined to form one working unit, and usually by the word and in English. And then at the bottom of the page there, we see a second number here, number two, subordinating conjunctions. Connect clauses to other clauses in such a way that one, the one introduced by the conjunction, functions as a subordinate constituent of the other, that is, as its subject or object, and an adjectival modifier of its subject or object, an adverbial modifier of its verb, etc. Some English subordinating conjunctions are if, because, since, although, and unless. Okay, an example at the top of the next page. The boy washed the dishes after the girl dried them. Now, this word after is introducing another clause, after the girl dried them, and that whole clause is an adverbial modifier, modifying the verb, washed. It's telling when the washing takes place. So it's a temporal adverbial modifier, if you want to get technical about it. And this kind of relationship between the subordinating clauses and the coordinated clauses and so forth will be seen more graphically when we get to diagramming sentences. And you'll see that in a subordinate clause, you'll see it come underneath another clause and be attached to it, or sometimes function in a position where this whole clause is the object of this other sentence, or the whole clause is the subject of the sentence, something of that nature. We'll talk more about those in the next chapter. Okay, then, section 319, conjunctions in Greek are quite similar to the functions of those in English. Certain differences should be noted. Number one, Greek coordinating conjunctions do not necessarily stand between the elements they connect. There are some funny word order things that will happen with conjunctions in Greek, and we'll get used to those as we look at these one by one. But there's a tendency for a number of them, at least, to have what we call, be in a position what we call post-positive in a lot of other books, meaning that it's right after the first word in the sentence. It'll be, or in the clause. It'll be the second word in the clause. And we'll see this with te and de and a number of words a little bit later on here. So they don't necessarily stand right between the elements they connect because of that word order feature. And secondly, some Greek subordinating conjunctions are always or under certain circumstances followed by other moods than the indicative. That's going to be coming later on too. Especially the subjunctive mood is used in cases like this. When you see certain subordinating conjunctions, they're going to be using a subjunctive verb form. That's not even going to be coming in this chapter, but it'll come a little bit later on. Okay, you're only going to use indicative in this chapter so far. Okay, then section 320, Greek coordinating conjunctions. Now, the rest of this is essentially vocabulary. There's a little bit of grammatical information as far as the way that some word order in some instances, and a lot of these words are function-type words. They're not quite as directly functional as, say, the prepositions are, but they're along those lines. Number one, the most important Greek coordinating conjunctions which may join any kind of grammatical element to another element of the same kind are kai, te, e, ala, ute, and mete. Now, these are going to be used to join grammatical elements of the same kind. Two nouns, two verbs, two clauses, two adverbs, just about anything that's the same kind of grammatical element, these can join them together. Now, A, the meaning of chi is usually given as simply and, but under certain circumstances it may mean both, also, to, or even, and occasionally it may be rendered in still other ways. Now, of course, what we're really dealing with here is not that this one word can mean all these different things, really. What we're dealing with is that the range of the Greek function word chi is a little bit different than the range of our word and. And so, there are some clues beyond just the word chi that will tell you how to translate it, whether translated as simply and or whether translated as unless or something. I mean, as both. It has to do with word order and the kind of grammatical elements you are joining. If you're joining elements of similar kinds, then you're normally going to translate it and. If you're joining elements of different kinds, you'll see that some other features come into play. So it's not so much that the word chi has all these meanings, it's just that the word chi plus context or other grammatical elements will determine different translations. Okay, first of all, when chi is a coordinating conjunction, it stands between grammatical units of the same type and means and. So first of all, we have chi, it's a coordinating conjunction, it's standing between elements of the same type, and there you translate it and that's pretty straightforward. So you can connect words, you've got Jakobos, chi, Yosef, chi, Simon, chi, Judas. You're listing a series of names here and conjoining each of them with the word chi. So that's a pretty straightforward use, exactly equivalent to English. Yes?
Do they drop the chi sometimes and just list?
Yes, they'll sometimes drop the chi just like we will and just list them, and you know, we'd have to supply commas between them. Probably not as frequently as we do in English, but that does happen. Mm-hmm.
Are you saying then that chi has a root meaning in the same way that preposition would?
Well, it may not be quite that. It is basically a function word that's joining things. So in that sense, yes, I think so. In other words, and is a good rough and ready root idea, but then some of these other translations like both, also, to, or even, see, all of those also have the root idea of an addition, you know, you're putting things together, but they're going to sometimes have a contrastive idea or put a little different emphasis on the way that it's being brought together, a little bit emphasis shift or something of that nature, and that information is coming from some other grammatical cues in the sentence or the context itself. So I think that's the way to think of it, at least, is that not so much that chi means all kinds of different things. It's just chi is one word in Greek, you see, just that one word, and it's coming forth in many different circumstances, and English is forced to translate it in different ways, just because English has lots of different words to cover those circumstances, whereas Greek just has one word and then it's using one word plus context and certain other grammatical features to determine how the thing's functioning. Okay. So these examples are just showing forth this idea, the commandment is holy and just and good. There you see a string of adjectives, hagia, chi, dikaia, chi, agathe. Three adjectives joined together by chi here. And, yes?
Well, like you said, if you took out chi and just listened, mm-hmm. You have to have a chi between the last two,
which
in the
English doesn't
really do.
Well, I think when I have seen it, there's usually a chi between the last elements. You've got a long series, just like in English, so you can kind of pick up on what's happening. Otherwise, you could get into some confusion with appositional structures and so forth. That remember, because the Greek doesn't have in the uncials, punctuation and so forth, there's usually some indicator like that. That's something we'll just have to watch as we see, but I can't think of any example where, you know, you just string things together with commas and not put the chi at the end, just like in English. You know, this, and this. We will almost always, if we string a bunch of things together like that, put an and in the last one at least, just so you know what the structure was. Because commas can do several different things in English, as they can, pauses and so forth can in Greek, and we don't want to mix one use with another, you know. Yes, John? Oh, yes. Thank you. Okay. Then you can also connect clauses here in letter beta here. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Of course, they've translated the way they see it. But in our ke ein ho logos, there's one clause, kai ho logos ein proston theon. There's another clause, kai theos ein ho logos. Each of those clauses has its own verb, and either subject object construction or predicate nominative construction. And it's a conjoining of three clauses here. Okay? Each of them independent, each of them could stand by themselves. Now, when chi, top of the next page, when chi occurs before two grammatical elements, which are coordinated by a second chi, it may be translated both, if the context permits. So again, notice that your translation is keyed to the context. And what we see here is a chi coming out in front of it, and then another chi. And there, you can feel this even in Greek. Chi ho animos, chi he thalassa, both the wind and the waves. Okay, you wouldn't translate it "and the wind and the waves" if "and," you know, you don't normally use the word "and" in English in the front of a sentence or clause or phrase. But so we translated both the wind and the waves. Even though we got "kai" in both places, the English way of expressing this idea is to use both and. So in Greek, you know, they're just using the same word, but the word is in a different word order structure and relationship. One of the kais is joining two elements. The other kai is out in front of the whole unit. Yes. Okay. Does that answer it? Okay. Now, a third use of kai, and here's another grammatical difference in the structure, not in the word kai, but in the structure. When kai is not a coordinating conjunction, that is, when it does not stand between two grammatical elements of the same type, it is an adverb which, with the meaning "also," "to," or "even." The context will indicate these meanings. Which of these meanings is most satisfactory. Now here what we see is the word kai is used, but it's not joining two elements of the same grammatical type. If you've got elements that look like they're of different grammatical type, then you're not going to translate it "and." And you'll find in general that when you see something like this, your mind will do the work for you almost. You'll find that "and" is not going to be an appropriate translation. And you may not even know why. It's just because that you're not having two elements of the same grammatical type being joined. And you'll translate, you'll feel that it should be translated something else. For example, "Alaithos kai sue su ex auton a." Certainly you also are one of them. Okay? Here you're not going to say "certainly and you are one of them." We just don't do that in English. But that's what the Greek has, is kai there. "Certainly and you are one of them." But you can get the feeling of it. Instead of "and," we'd say "also." But it's got the same kind of an idea. In other words, whoever said this is adding Peter to the other group. And "also" is more appropriate in English here, and I think that's a proper way to translate it. It's just because it's not just the word "kai" now. It's the word "kai" in a grammatical construction whereby the two elements are not of the same type. "Alaithos," for example, is an adverb, and "su" there that's joined with is a pronoun. So they're just not of the same grammatical type. And that will transmit that information to you, whether it's subconscious or conscious. You may not even be consciously recognizing you've got two elements of a different type, but you may see as you read that "I can't translate that "and," it wouldn't fit in English. And that's usually what will give you the key before anything else. Okay, Matthew 5:46, "Uhi kai ho teleonai to auto poiusin." "Do not even the tax collectors do the same." Okay, here again, "kai hoi telonai." "Do not they do the same." And "uhi" is not coordinate with the rest of it. You see, "uhi" is just a negative starting the whole phrase, and you can't really join that by "kai" to something else, that, you know, like teleonai, or telonai, excuse me. Now, "eche estai kai hekardia su," "your heart will be there too." Okay, again, "eche," "there," and "estai," the verb, and then "kai," and then "hekardia." You're having the verb in between, really technically a verb and a noun here being joined by "kai," and so they're grammatical elements of a different type, and so again, the translation is going to be "to" or "also." "Your heart will be there also," or "your heart will be there too." Yes. Glenn?
It seems to me in that verse in Matthew 6:21 that that's equating the part that he has written down here with where your treasure is, which is previous to that. And so "kai" really belongs, he's equating "your heart will be there," you know, where your treasure is, and mm-hmm. to there, you know, the KSI. is really the phrase that he's connecting the "kai" with the previous one. See, so the "kai" is just out of order in this one.
Well, it is out of order, but it's also, because it's out of order, that's what's transmitting some different information. It could be rewritten, you know, where your heart is, let's see, where your treasure is, it's even there. See, it's hard to get this into a phrase in English where "and" would even be appropriate. Where your treasure is, and there your heart will be. You can kind of get a kind of a consequential idea out of it, but it's still, you know, as a coordinating conjunction, you're taking two statements and joining them together and asserting them both. And the fact that you've got where and there in a certain type of relationship here is indicating we've got a different kind of construction. This where your heart is there, you know, where your treasure is, there your heart will be, is not just two independent clauses being joined together. But where and the there is a thing that's connecting this, and this other is being subordinate to the rest. So it's really a different kind of structure. You can see, you know, it is connecting it with that before. There is a connection involved, but the translation is going to be a little bit different than the word and. And I think you're kind of getting close to the idea there that chi has a particular meaning that's, you know, it's got maybe a root meaning we couldn't even find an equivalent word for. It's got this connective idea, and there's definitely a connection going on. It's just that in English, this connection wouldn't be appropriately translated and. We have different words to cover that kind of a connection situation. But when we connect things that are two grammatical elements of the same type and using them together as a unit and then using a verb or something else, if they're subjects, then we'll use chi. Then we'll translate an and in, excuse me. Yes, John?
In Matthew 5:46, I got a couple of questions. First of all, in number 2 up above, where we didn't translate,
mm-hmm.
Is that the only situation where you would translate it both? Because if not, then in this situation, I mean, theoretically, you could say do not both attack
okay.
The same, and it would make sense.
Uh-huh. It may make sense in some instances, but I don't want to necessarily say that the only place you'll ever translate it both is up there in that two category, because sometimes there may be some situation where you might find another conjunction. In fact, we'll see another situation here at the top of 245 there, that Roman numeral 3, te chi, where you'll find te and chi, and you'll translate te as both in the same kind of construction. When you're going to translate it both, it's not in the sense of two of them or something like this. It's in the sense of both this and this. You're going to have things that follow, and the things that follow are going to be joined with another chi. And that's what's going to determine this translation for you.
Okay. And, mm-hmm. And then also could fit in here, not also the tax collectors do the same. But it appears to me in that situation,
sure.
The context has to determine,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
He's drawing, even though it's a negative there, we can't assume that he's saying that, that they're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But you understand what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, the choice that you make between two, also, or even is going to be dependent on the context and what seems to fit the best in English. In other words, the Greek word is still the same for all of them. It's just what fits the best in the context. And there might be some difference of opinion in some instances on it, too. So that's a good point. It kind of depends on what was said before. And if a certain thing was said about... Certain other people doing this, do not also the tax collectors do the same? It also may be appropriate if you set a certain framework for it. But if you haven't, and if your whole point is that we're going to take an extreme case here and say do not even they do the same, then even might be a better translation in English. Okay? So there is some merit to different translations of this in English, but remember, it's chi plus context that's giving these different translations. Just like with prepositions, we had a root meaning for the preposition, but that plus the case function, or that plus the case function plus the context and so forth may determine a variable translation of that same thing in English. And it's just not so much that Greek is inconsistent, it's just that Greek and English are inconsistently in phase during the various ramifications of a particular preposition. In other words, the range of a Greek preposition is different than the range of an equivalent English preposition. And it's not totally equivalent, in other words. Okay. Now, the part B here, teth, is peculiar from the point of view of English in that it does not stand between the two syntactic units it serves to join, but after the second one. It is much less common than chi. All right. Here's an instance where we have what I call a postpositive, or one that a word that's coming second in its position in its clause. And in this case, may not always be a clause, but it may be following a word that's being joined. What happens here is that the te is following the second element. Instead of in front of the second element, like chi would be, see, chi is normally after the first element in front of the second element, between the two elements. Te is going to follow the second element. And this takes a little getting used to as far as wording is concerned, because you find you don't understand it until you've read the whole thing. That's something funny about Greek. We've already run into it with the case endings and functions and so forth. You almost have to read through the whole sentence to know what it says. Because we're always trying to put it back in English word order. We've got subject first, then verb and object. And in Greek, you might find the subject way at the end. So you couldn't translate it, really, unless you read the whole thing through and then started picking things out and putting them back in order. That doesn't mean you can't get the ideas and get them transmitted to your mind. Once you start thinking in Greek, it's not going to be much of a problem. But to translate makes a different story. You've got to read through the whole thing and then start translating. Yes?
I think I remember reading somewhere, probably Robertson, saying that ka indicates a closer connection between the elements that it connects than kinda. Is that a useful...
Well, this book just treats it pretty much as an equivalent, but there is, I think I know what he's getting at there. There is a kind of a, because of this postpositive form and because of the fact that it's a very shorter word, in the actual saying of something, it sounds shorter and more intimate. And I think that's what he's getting at, is that the connection may be a little bit more solid. In other words, it's trying to, you know, look at them as one unit a little bit more. And I don't know if it's I would put a lot of emphasis on that, you know, trying to make it, you know, don't make a doctrinal issue rest on that, because that's an observation based on the way that these things seem to be used. But I think from what I've seen, I would be inclined to agree with that. I'd have to look at it and look at, you know, that'd be another example for study, you know, where you could really compare sets of them. But there is a certain feeling that you get from this. It's a little bit more immediacy, a little bit more, because of the shortness of it, and so there's a feel to it that it's not so much this and this, but kind of this and this. They're kind of grouped together a little bit more, functioning as one. Yes?
There was a doctrinal issue here on this.
Mm-hmm.
I heard several teachers maintain that today was more intimate.
Uh-huh.
Because of speaking in tongues and act like
right.
That they spoke in tongues and prophesied.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Well, sure. What you'll often see is if you have a larger structure where, say, you've got two independent clauses that are joined by chi, and then in one of the independent clauses you've got elements that a compound subject, a compound verb, a compound object, within a second element of that, you'll see chi with one and see tam with the others. So that may be also what Robertson's getting at, is that especially when you get big structures like that, you want to make sure you know which things are closer to each other than other things. And that would be a similar example there, where you get a couple of verbal ideas joined by te, and then the whole thing being joined by chi to another clause, another independent clause. So I think there's merit. I mean, there's support for that, just because of the fact that they're trying to tie together the more immediate things on the lower level with tes in situations like that. It doesn't mean that chi can't be used in those other instances too. It's just that it makes it a little bit less ambiguous and shifts your eye from one word to the other, so you can kind of see what units are grouped together. That'd be a good observation. What needs to be done on a question like this is to do a study on that, you know, and that'd be another one possible for your assignment for this year. And on a research paper, I'd be more than happy to approve that if somebody would go through and examine the usages of chi and the usages of te and see if you can find a consistent pattern like that you could build an argument from and put the data right down there. Mm-hmm.
What you're saying right now is that the saying that because it's speaking in tongues with te and
mm-hmm.
Prophesying with chi, it's not really valid to say that speaking in tongues is intimate to the fact that they were filled with the Spirit and prophesying
with
came along too. You're not really saying that.
Uh-huh.
According to the structure of the Greek, they can't really get away with saying that.
No, I don't think so. And is it a te chi construction then, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, it's, you know, it'd be translated both this and this.
Both this and this.
Yeah, in fact, it's the top of the next page.
Mm-hmm. That.
Sure. We're going to see some mix of these two. Like you say, like we see in the next page, is tech eye construction is pretty much equivalent to the other. But, you know, you hate to say equivalence because there are slight nuances that are sometimes hard to describe. It's a matter of getting in the language and getting a feel for it. But that's why Robertson makes those observations, a little bit more intimacy. And how do you translate that in words in English and make a direct translation of that? It's real hard to do. But you're picking up some cues, some information, just from the way the things are worded that are helpful. And those are the kinds of things that would be real useful to do papers and so forth on, just to begin to get a feel for the language and how it's expressing things. It's not an exact science by any means, and things like that can generate lots of debate. Generally, I don't think you can ever really prove any doctrinal position on the basis of something like that. It would be knowing what the doctrine is from other scripture and so forth, and then seeing that and using these other things to give more light to those that are willing. But to those who aren't willing, you're not going to get very far in arguing. Somebody can always come up with an objection to it and so forth. And you really are tied into the whole language and the way it's used in general in order to really understand things. That's just the way language is, any language, our language as well as any other. And you just have to be real careful and be as honest as possible. Okay, a few more comments here. We see this text being used now as a postpositive, coming after the second element. Look at a couple of examples here. Connecting words or phrases, first of all. In agape pneumati te paoutetos, in love and a spirit of gentleness. Okay, here we've got agape, love, connected with pneumati, love and the spirit, and then of gentleness is modifying that. But notice where the te comes. It comes after pneumati. Instead of saying en agape, you might have said en agape kai pneumati valutetos, but instead we are using te, and te is following agape, pneumati here. It's postpositive, so it takes a little bit of getting used to. And if this has got a little bit more intimate connection than kai, it makes some sense here. Love and the spirit of gentleness are just almost two the same thing. Okay, connecting clauses. Edoxazon ton theon epon te auto. They glorified God and they said to him. Okay, and then epon, you see, there's two verbal ideas being conjoined here. The verbal elements, really two clauses. They glorified God and they said. So two complete clauses here, but it's mainly the verbs that are being joined. And we find apon te. Te is following the first word in the clause. Yes?
It seems it's working more than it was like data was, that it's just simply following the first word of the clause rather than the whole clause.
Right. It's the first word in the clause. Exactly. If it's clauses you're dealing with, regardless of what that first word was, it'll follow that. And so when you're connecting clause, he didn't really make that too clear because actually his statement... Yeah. Actually, his statement wouldn't really fit if it's clauses. Does not stand between the two syntactic, but after the second one. It doesn't really stand after the second entire clause. If it's a clause, the te won't come at the end of the entire clause. That would be real confusion. It comes right after the first word. So he really didn't make that clear here. I didn't notice that before, but that's really the case. It's just like de. We'll get to that one a little bit later on, but it comes right after the first word in this, if you're joining two clauses. Yes?
Do you know if there'd be any, like, 1 Corinthians 4:21, if in that case, say the preposition was repeated before both of them, in agape and in, there would be more of a tendency to use kai there?
Well, yes, either that or sometimes just a comma, just a pause. sometimes you'll see them strung together like that, in Agape and Pneuma. There were several others, and then maybe a Chi before the last one. Now, if you string them together like that and repeat the preposition and so forth, I think you're more likely to see Chi in a situation like that. Although, normally you wouldn't see... So you'd have to say en tes. If you use te, then you'd have something coming in between the preposition and its object, and that's generally avoided. Yeah, just can't remember seeing that any place. That's a good point. That may be one of the criterion for using te too. That if somebody did a real analysis on it, they may say, well, here we have prepositional phrases. We don't want to use it there and break that up. There may be some word order. Kind of a hierarchical rules that this is not going to interfere with. I've never seen anybody really do a discussion of that in detail, although Robertson may have something in the Big Grammar on that. That book is too big to read. It's not the kind of book you just read through, so I haven't checked the details on that, but it'd be worthwhile to do. That's one of the things you'd want to do when you do some of these grammatical studies, is check Robertson's the big thick one, because you're going to get a lot more refined detail that you wouldn't get out of a book like Goetz's. Okay, then we see another combination that's similar like this to this chi and chi here, te and te, like chi and chi means both and. And it could be not only but also. So, hi te phalei auton, homoios te o arsenis, both their females and the males. Okay. The not only is coming only from the idea that it's contrastive, and it's not necessarily just, there's no negative actually seen there, although we'll see some other constructions where you will get a negative involved. That's just more idiomatic. I think it might be better just translated both and, both this and this. Now, here we see the te coming after the first word in both clauses. And the first word is different. The first one is an article, and here's the footnote. The article has an accent when it's followed by te. And that's partly because you get two things that are proclitic, you know. And neither one of them has something. So you've got to get an accent someplace to even, stress it. So that's part of the reason. And then notice homoios right after homoios te. So again, it's postpositive after the first word in the clause. And here it's even coming between the article and its noun. That doesn't seem to be a problem. Yes, Mark, did you have a question?
Well, I thought Ted would have come after
Arsenis. Oh, again, that's the reason for that is his statement above there is not real accurate, or at least it's not accurate when you're dealing with clauses. When you deal with clauses, the Ted does not come after the element itself, but it comes after the first word in the clause. You see, what you're really doing is joining two clauses, both are females and they're males. And likewise, their males is more homoios, you see, is likewise. And so we see two clauses here. They're not independent clauses, but two subordinate clauses, as it were, or two elements that are, you've got several words associated with just females and males. And so it's just because of the construction here and that the phrase itself is a little bit longer. In fact, what you would have, even if you didn't have that homoios there, suppose you knocked that out, then you would have hi te phalei, hoi te arsenis, and you would have te after the hoi before the arsenis. So after, as long as you've got more than one word there, it's going to come after the first word.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an adverb. It's kind of... notice that omega sigma there on the end. Remember how we made adverbs taking omega nu and then changing the nu to a sigma? So homoios means likewise. Likewise. So it'd be both the females and likewise the males. It'd be more. His translation is pretty, just, eliminate some words here and there and doesn't worry about it. But the fact that the homoios is there, it's not just a non existent entity. It does mean something. Likewise.
Sure, shouldn't be homoousio.
Oh, no. Okay. All right.
From his
name, you're right. Yeah, right. Same substance as that theological term that was coined that's not found in the Greek text. Okay. Then, top of the next page, te chi. Here's kind of a mixture where you find te on the one element and chi on the other. In other words, if Tet and Chi are kind of working the same basic function anyway, then you have a mixed form Tet Chi. And sometimes you'll see the Tet Chi together, right together, because you see the Tet follows the first one, and it can be put in a post-positive position, you see. How do I explain this? Remember your Chi and Chi situation, where you had Chi coming way out in the beginning of a whole phrase, and then another Chi in between. Well, with Tet doesn't come out in the beginning of anything. It's going to come after the first word. So oftentimes that's going to place your Tet right in front of the Chi that's still in its normal place, so you get Tet Chi. So it really makes sense. It's just combining the features of both of those words. So first example here, ho tes strategos tu hieru kai hoi archieres, both the captain of the temple and the chief priest. Okay, notice the te is coming right after the article, because it's holding the second position in the sentence. And so you're saying both the captain of the temple and the chief priest, and so we have a te kai construction. Now, if this were done with kai and kai, you might see kai out in the front. You say kai ho strategos kai hoi archieres, and that would be like your previous structure. But because te does not occur in that very first position, it's going to be ho te strategos. Yes?
Does it not occur because it's proclivity?
Well, yes, that's another situation. This would be an enclitic, I guess it would be, you know, because it's always following the thing. But that's a good point. Because it doesn't have its own stress, it's kind of hard to stand in a position all by itself, at least leading into something. That's a good point. But I don't know if that would be the reason, or whether it's, you know, it's hard to know which came first, the chicken or the egg, you know, whether it's post-positive because it's proclitic, or whether it's proclitic because it's post-positive, you know, or enclitic. All right? Acts chapter 1, verse 1. We find poien te kai didaskein. Now, here's the situation where you see the te and the kai together, just because, so you might see this structure. If you saw the structure with kai, it'd be kai poien kai didaskein. But now, because it's the te is going to come after poien, and that's going to put it right in front of kai, so you'll get te kai. And you'll see this te kai phrase fairly frequently, at least. Okay, but it just means the same thing, both this and this. Okay, then part C, particle A here. We've seen this before. Remember, we saw it with our comparisons. This is bigger than this, or this is greater than this. We've seen it before. But this is the normal conjunction, coordinating conjunction, or where one thing is there's a certain contrast implied as well as an addition. And so, excuse me. As a coordinating conjunction, it means or, but in comparisons, it means than. And there is a kind of a common idea, I don't know what you would call it, but it's not like it's totally disjointed meanings. This, then this. When you use a comparison, you're kind of making an alternative in terms of some degree of an attribute or something, but there's some similarity to it. But functionally, as far as translating in English is concerned, we need to make a distinction there. So as a conjunction, connecting words, just connecting words, you know, this word or that word, lambanos entele e kenson, they received taxes or tribute. So we've got our verb, they receive, and then you've got two direct objects, and they're joined by a, which is indicating an alternative between the two. Rather than saying they receive taxes and tribute, it's they receive taxes or tribute. And now it's one or the other, or both. This gets into that inclusive or exclusive or. You get some, you know, that's another subject for logic and so forth. But as far as the language is concerned, it's probably just generally you take things as being the inclusive or, one or the other, or both, unless there's some contextual reason to do otherwise. Okay, then connecting clauses. Whole clauses can be connected the same way. So, a palos estarote hyperhemon, a, and then there's your or, eis to onoma palon e baptiste theta, was Paul crucified for you, or were you baptized in the name of Paul? All right. So we're just translating that or, and it's pretty simple. Now, A and A, you can see the same thing, either or. Sometimes you'll see the A out in front, just like you saw with Chi, and it'll be translated now either, and then or. Sometimes you'll have a whole string of ors afterwards. Suppose you've got a number of alternatives to a certain situation. You may start out with A in either in English, and then continue with A's. It's a little simpler in Greek, because you just use the same word, but it's mainly the position of it that is determining whether it's translated either or in English. So, A en apokalypse, A gnose, A propheteia, A didaske, A en propheteia, A didache. It's kind of interesting there. We see the preposition in all of the elements except the last one. Sometimes you have to take note of that, too. It's almost as though there's kind of a more direct coupling between prophecy and teaching than there is between revelation, knowledge, and so forth. But that's interesting, too, because normally prophecy, and so of course, involves speaking something and communicating it, and that can involve teaching. So that's interesting. It's not a gigantic thing, but it's kind of, when you're flowing along and you see N on all of them, then the last one you don't, you know, it's worth paying attention to. Yes?
I would almost imagine, except that they decided to put the accent on that last one. You saw that
the trouble is, you'd have to have an iota subscript on it too. And see, te. Right, that's true. But you see, notice, remember, if this is an article, it's going to have to be in the dative, and your article would be te then. See, the he would only be for the nominative form, and the nominative wouldn't fit for the preposition in. N's going to govern the dative, so that would probably eliminate that right there. But of course, you know, there could be a conceivable situation in which you had a string of nominatives, this or this or this, and that may be a valid consideration there. That's something to be aware of. You know, I mean, the principle that you've mentioned is something to be aware of in certain situations. Remembering that the vowel points and the I'm talking Hebrew now. Remembering that the accent marks and the punctuation are not a part of the original text. Same principle applies to Hebrew with vowel points and so forth too. You sometimes have to consider the options that are available to you on this. So in this case, it wouldn't work just because of the fact that you have dative case. Even without the iota subscript, so you would have to have a te on it in order to make it dative. But other situations may be worthy of consideration there, for sure. Yes.
Eric? This word A in the conjunction between A.
Mm-hmm.
That A is a subtext.
Yeah, it's really the same word, but it's, you can't really translate it or. I mean, it's kind of hard to draw a direct comparison there. Let's see, how do they translate prene? Just before ever, something? Yeah, that's... you've seen kind of a contrast. It might be closer to this idea of comparison than it is just to the idea of or, but it's real hard to come, you know... Some of these words, it's really hard to come to a certain common element that you see in all of these and find a word for it in English. That's the problem. It's not that there's not a concept. It's just sometimes hard to describe it in the words. Sometimes you have to do a whole, you know, paper or thesis on it to show the connection. And certainly you're welcome to do that if somebody wants to do it. All right. I just keep throwing these out. Someday. I've been doing this for a number of years, and we're starting to get a lot of papers on different things. So, you know, this is one way I can get some research done that I always wanted to do. But some of these things are worth doing, for not only for the purpose of getting some research, but for the purpose of the student getting some experience with the language on a deeper level, to realize what these grammarians have gone through to come up with these things. You know, the grammarians don't have revelation from above, you know, that proves that this is such and such. They're doing the best they can. Sometimes their judgment gets involved and so forth. Sometimes their theological biases get involved, or their whole philosophy of the way they're looking at inspiration and other things. So I just want to encourage you to, you know, even if you don't do a paper on this, someday you may be faced with a theological question out there as you're pastoring a church or something, and you need to do some more than just look at Robertson or somebody. You'll need to say, maybe these guys aren't right either. Maybe let's look at some possibilities here and learn how to build a case for your point using the biblical usage rather than just relying on the lexicons and so forth. Okay. Then in comparisons, A means than, and he talks this way. I always am a little uncomfortable with saying, you know, in comparisons, this means this. What he's really saying is that in English we would translate it this way. That's what he really is saying. It's not so much that the Greek word means that. It gets to be, you get into some trouble sometimes because then you get kind of this intrinsic locked in idea that it cannot change, and it's a little bit dangerous. Anyway, we would translate that way in English. So, kraton esten gamein a porustai. It is better to marry than to burn. So here we have the A there as a comparison. And see, it's usually in this kind of a context, this type of a comparison here where you've got two verbs involved, it's pretty easy to see. You've got an alternative, you see, either you marry or you burn, as it were. And so the idea of or there, marry or burn, better to marry than burn. We would translate it then in that situation, but it's still got the same idea of alternatives or several choices. Yes. Well, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything there for you know. The form may not occur in the middle voice. Sometimes that happens, but maybe there's such an obvious self-interest in Mary that they didn't even have to express it in Greek. But I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's certainly an effect there. It may not be always a positive interest, but. That's something, too, that this idea of interest doesn't necessarily always mean positive interest, but it may be negative, too. It may be something that's not pleasant, but it's happening to yourself, and the thing is going to have this middle voice idea. Okay, then Allah. There's another interesting word that's used for contrast. Allah indicates a contrast or difference between the two elements it connects. It usually corresponds to the English but. But when connecting clauses or introducing sentences, it may sometimes be rendered by however, yet, or nevertheless. And that, again, is just simply because of the way English would do that. We will sometimes start off a sentence with but. However, it's often more appropriate or it flows better if the context is setting it up. You've set up certain this, and now you're saying however this. Kind of depends on context exactly how you're going to render that in English, although in the Greek it's just going to be done by Allah. And Allah's got this contrastive idea to it. We'll see da a little bit later on here, too, that may get into that to some extent, but it's not as strong as Allah. So when Allah connects words or phrases, the first is often preceded by a negative. Now, this is not a rule. This is just an observation as to where you often see it. In other words, we're not trying to say now that you've got to have a negative before the first one to use Allah. That's not really the case. It's just that this is one of the most frequent usages of it, is when you have not this but this, not this but this, not I but the Lord here, ukego Allahu koyos, making a contrast between one thing and another, and they say not this but this. So that's one of the common usages of it. Okay, then connecting clauses. Here again, this idea of contrast. Humes lupe thesis that al he lupe humon es charan genesitai. You will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will turn into joy. So it's being translated but. It's not just and, it's but. It's contrastive. So this will happen, but your sorrow will be turned into joy. Al here is an abbreviated form, especially before words that begin with a vowel. You'll see that, but not always. You've seen above, you've got Allah or Kurios, so that may have to do with the fact that it's rough reading in both places. So you'll see it abbreviated sometimes. And there's no hard and fast rule for it, but we've already seen abbreviations on words, so there shouldn't be any surprise. Okay, then at the top of the next page, idiomatic phrase, Umonon Allah Kai, means not only but also. And you can pretty well translate that direct. I mean, just translate it direct. U monon, not only. Monon means only. U means not. And Allah means but. And Kai means and. So not only, but also. So it's just a straightforward thing. Here's an example. Here's 2 Corinthians 8:21. U monon enopion kuriu Allah kai enopion anthropon. Not only in the sight of the Lord, but even in the sight of men. And again here, but even in the sight of men, or but also in the sight of men, is going to be determined by what else was going on in the context. And you'll have to just make a choice that fits the best in that particular situation. Okay, got our first spell? All right, good. Now this next one, uta, in clauses with verbs with indicative and meta with other moods. This we've already seen. Whenever you're dealing with negatives, there's an u form and a me form. U for the indicative and me for everything else. He says with other moods here, we really haven't had other moods yet, but we've contrasted the u forms when used with the indicative and the others when used with participles or infinitives, but actually the me forms will also be used with subjunctives and imperatives and so forth too, these other moods. And since we haven't had them yet, of course, we haven't run into it, but you'll probably see it used more often, the me forms in that situation, maybe than even with the participles and the others. Okay, ute or meta means nor, so you've got this kind of a neither nor type of thing. So you're making a negative alternative, as it were. So you're just, it's the same idea as or, but it's now with a negative. And of course, in English, we do that with neither nor. So ute thanatos, ute zoe, ute angeloi, ute archai, etc. Neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities. We're stringing this together. And starting out with an ute, giving a, even before you get into the whole structure, you've got an ute, and that's indicating neithers to start it off. So that's quite analogous to the usages of other things that we've seen. Just a negative form. Okay, then, and remember that if you had strings of subjunctives or something, it would be mete all the way through. Or strings of participles, it would be mete or infinitives. Number two, the most important Greek coordinating conjunctions which serve to join clauses or to indicate the connection of sentences with preceding sentences are gar, de, un, ara, ude, and mede. So here we're introducing a whole new category, and what we're seeing now is clauses their coordinating conjunctions would serve to join clauses or to indicate a connection of sentences with preceding sentences. So you've got this idea of joining the clauses and making connections and meaning between this and something else. This is often going to be seen in ideas where it may not always be cause and effect or if this, then this, but based on what's gone before, you're saying this. The idea of therefore, for, these things are keyed to something that went before, keyed to some kind of a context that you've set up already, letting the reader know that what he's reading is dependent upon what's gone before in some sense. So we're not just dealing with independent elements that have no relationship to each other, we're dealing with things that do relate to one another. And so let's look at some examples of this. Gar, for example, meaning for, it's probably the best simple translation of it that you can find, but the feeling of it is, of course, our English word for has quite a range too. And gar just covers a certain portion of it. First of all, by itself, now gar is also a postpositive. It'll come right after the first element. There'll always be a word before it. In other words, you'll never see something start off with gar. It'll always have something else in front. So, ephobun togar, for they were afraid. Or, hilaron gar doten agapahotheos, for God loves a cheerful giver. See, we're putting the for out in front of it. Of course, you couldn't do that. You couldn't translate this literally. You wouldn't say, cheerful for giver loves God. That's not going to make any sense in English. But the idea of gar is postpositive. It'll come after whatever word is there. See, if this thing were set up in a different word order, if it was ho theos doten agapa or something like that, then it would be ho theos gar or ho gar theos. You see the gar right after the very first word. In that case, it would be an article. Now, when gar occurs in combination with other conjunctions or adverbs, each usually has the meaning it would have separately. So it'll be, here's kai gar, for example, or gar kai, each of them having the same meaning they would have normally. So you can just pretty much translate it straightforward. Matthew 8:9 here. Kai gar ego anthropos e mi hupo exousion, for I too am a man under authority. All right, it's translated, the four is coming out in the front in translation, even though it's after the word Kai and the other. For I too, or I also, there you see Kai again, meaning also, because it's not joining elements of the same type. He's just coming out, you know, with a statement. It's relating to something that went before, but there's no sentence structure, you know, that covering the thing that went before. Then another example where it's reversed, ace tu to gar kai egrapsa, for this end I also wrote. For to this end I also wrote. So ace tu to, into this thing, literally, I also wrote. The again, also is being translated because you're not joining elements of the same type. The gar is being translated for, it's postpositive, it's coming right after tu to, you see. And so it's ace tuto gar, this tuto is starting the whole phrase, and then the gar is falling right after that. Yes. Yeah. Well, actually, Kai here isn't really connecting things of a similar type. If you, you know, of course, you'd have to have the rest of the sentence to tell that for sure. But usually when Kai is connecting things of the same type, they'll be on either side of it. And if you look on either side of this, you've got gar, you've got ace tuto, neither one of them are going to go with egrapsa. They're not verbs. So you can see from that you're going to translate Kai as also rather than as and here. And that's one of the keys for knowing how to translate Kai.